Aye, Captain. The man's voice was low and deep, almost a basso. I was surprised that he could speak English, but then I remembered that English was the standard language among space crews. Yes, you. Any complaints? Any problems you want to speak to me about? Bahadur blinked several times. He was obviously thinking as fast as he could. At last he said, I do not understand, Captain. Fuchs planted his fists on his hips, then switched to the Asian language he used on the bridge. He must have repeated his question. Bahadur swung his head slowly from side to side. No, sir, he said in English. I have no problems to speak to you. Fuchs considered his response for a few silent moments. Then he said, Good. I'm glad. May I go now, Captain? With Fuchs standing a hand's breadth in front of him, Bahadur was pinned against the sickbay table. Are you certain everything is okay? Fuchs asked, his tone openly mocking now. I don't want any member of my crew to be unhappy. Bahadur's brows knitted. Then he replied, I am happy, Captain. That's fine. And the rest of the crew? Are they all happy too? Yes, Captain. Happy. Good. Then you can tell them for me that I would be very unhappy to see them frightened like a bunch of cowardly rabbits. Bahadur jerked back as if he'd been slapped in the face. Remind them that I explained to each and every one of you that this would be a dangerous mission. Do you remember that? Yes, Captain, Bahadur said slowly. You said there would be dangers. And a great reward at the end. Do you remember that also? A great reward, yes, Captain. Good, Fuchs said with conspicuously false cheer. Remind the rest of the crew. Danger, but a great reward afterward. I will do so, Captain. Yes. Fuchs's expression became iron hard. And tell them that I don't want my crew to be weeping and wailing like a pack of old women. Tell them that. Bahadur's shaved head was bobbing up and down now like a puppet's. Fuchs stood aside, and the man scuttled past him, through the hatch, and rushed by me like a schoolboy running from the wrath of the headmaster. I turned from the crewman's retreating back to Fuchs, still standing there with his fists planted on his hips. So this was the captain's calculated show of force. He had cowed the man completely. Surprised? Fuchs asked, sneering at the awe that must have been clearly written on my face. What did you expect me to do? Beat him to a pulp? Spying. I have to confess that that was exactly what I had expected Fuchs to do. Unleash the same kind of furious violence on the crewman Bahadur that he had vented on me the first time we met. But he was far cleverer than that. He had cowed the big Mongol with moral superiority and a caustic, withering tongue. Would it be enough, I wondered, as I started back to the crew's quarters? Would the big technician stay cowed? I wouldn't go back there just now, Fuchs said to me as I started down the passageway. I turned back toward him. Sir? With a sardonic little smirk, he explained, They probably think you're spying on them. My eyes nearly popped out of my head. Me? Spying? How else would I know about their grumbling? Don't they realize you have cameras watching them? I asked. Microphones listening? Computers to translate their language? Fuchs actually laughed, a harsh, bitter barking. They're tearing their quarters apart right now, searching for my bugs. They won't find any.
Why not?
Because they've crawled away on their built-in wheels, down along the air shaft and into my compartment.
He looked smugly pleased with himself.
Want to see 'em?
Without waiting for my reply, he headed down the passageway. He didn't bother to look back. I followed, as he knew I would.
I'm sure they're doing an especially good job of ripping your bunk apart, he said as we reached the door to his quarters. When they find nothing, they'll be certain that you're the spy in their midst.
That's why you had me come with you when you braced Bahadur, I realized. Fuchs's only reply was a sly grin. We entered his compartment. He went to his desk and pulled a slim, flat, black object from the top drawer. He pressed a thumb against it, and several tiny lights winked green on across its top. Remote controller, he explained. Set to operate only when it's activated by my thumbprint. Otherwise, it runs the wall screen. The wall screen stayed blank, though. Fuchs aimed the remote at the ventilation grid in the overhead. The lights blinked briefly, and then a pair of miniature metallic objects crawled through the grid and along the metal overhead toward him. No bigger than my thumb, they looked like minuscule metal caterpillars. Midget-sized wheels lined their lengths. Looking closer, I saw that they were actually ball bearings.
Magnets hold them against the overhead, Fuchs said, almost as if speaking to himself. Nanomotors provide propulsion.
But nanotechnology is outlawed, I said.
On Earth.
But
this is the real world, Humphreys. My world.
Your world, I repeated.
The world your father exiled me to more than 30 years ago.
My father exiled you? Fuchs turned off the remote and sat heavily in his desk chair. The two bugs clung to the overhead, inert.
Oh, the old humper didn't have me officially driven out. I still have the legal right to return to Earth. But I could never build my own company there. Your father saw to it that I'd never be able to raise a penny of capital. None of the major corporations would even take me on as an employee.
Then how did you survive? I asked, taking one of the chairs in front of the desk.
It's different off Earth. Out on the frontier, you're worth what you can accomplish. I could work. I could control other workers, supervise them. I could take risks that nobody else would even think of taking. What did I care? Your father had stolen my life. What difference did it make?
You built your fortune off Earth.
What fortune? He snorted. I'm just a derelict. A man who's captained ore ships and run prospecting probes out in the belt. One of thousands. A rock rat. A drifter.
My eyes turned to the battered book on his desk. Better to reign in hell than serve in heaven, I quoted softly. He laughed bitterly.
Yes, the original sour grapes line.
But you'll be a very wealthy man when you come back from Venus. He stared at me a moment, then said,
Satan sums it up neatly. All is not lost, the unconquerable will, and study of revenge, immortal hate, and courage never to submit or yield.
I had to admire him, almost. That's how you feel? I asked.
That is precisely how I feel, he said with fervor.
All these years you've nursed a hatred against my father because he beat you in business.
He stole my company, and stole the woman I loved. She loved me, too.
Then why did she...
He killed her, you know.
I should have felt startled, I suppose. But somehow I had almost expected that from him. Seeing my disgust, Fuchs leaned forward intently.
He did. She tried to be a good wife to him, but she still loved me. All that time she still loved me. When he finally understood that, he murdered her.
My father's no murderer, I said.
Isn't he? He killed your brother, didn't he?
No, I can't believe that.
And now he's killing you as well.
I shot to my feet. I may not be on very good terms with my father, but I won't listen to you making such accusations. Fuchs started to frown, but it turned into a sneering, maddening chuckle.
Go right ahead, Humphreys. March off in the righteous dudgeon.
He waved a hand in the general direction of the door.
They ought to be finished tearing your bank apart by now. Be careful what you say to them. They're convinced you're spying on them for me, you know.
The atmosphere in the crew's quarters was as thick and venomous as the Venusian air outside the ship. They all stared at me in sullen silence. My bunk was torn to shreds. They had ripped apart my sheets, my pillow, even the mattress. The drawers beneath the bunk were pulled out, thoroughly rifled. Even my shoji screen had been slashed